Hello, Epic Career Tales listeners. This is Karen Huller, founder and owner of Epic Careering. And this is our October issue of Epic Career Tales. Our guest this month is Jim Kerr. He's Vice President of Corporate Communications at Unisys. I've known Jim for several years now, and he's just, even since we initially met, he's just been continually climbing that ladder. And he has a very interesting career. And I hope that you will sign up for our newsletter if you're not already subscribed, so that you can see his written answers to about a dozen questions that he provided to us regarding his career path and the challenges that he's faced in his career. The questions in this podcast are going to be a little more personal, but also a little bit deeper. And I'm really looking forward to getting down to the nitty-gritty of Jim Kerr and who he is and his talents and what he hopes to do with them. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for having me.
I have some fun questions to start out with, kind of to keep it light a little bit. Yeah. I wanted to know what one fiction book is, because I know you're a very avid reader and you have been from your life. What was one fiction book that you can say from an early age left you changed somehow?
Yeah, I know the answer to that one right away. It's definitely To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Yeah, that one really, when I read that, I guess it was in my early teenage years, it really affected me, and then seeing the movie, just a very, very powerful story, beautifully told, simple in its expression, but the way it reveals itself and the characterization and the plot, it's just a very powerful movie and very powerful book.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I remember that book as well, and the movie. What about a nonfiction book that you can say influenced your career immeasurably?
Nonfiction books don't come to mind as much. I was influenced quite a bit by John McPhee and his writing, his nonfiction writing. There were quite a few books exploring topics, simple topics, Florida Everglades and the Jersey Pine Barrens. And the way he writes combines research with a narrative style, anecdotal, lots of anecdotes, that story very grabbing. Yeah, that's one of the, I'd say, nonfiction, and of course, Michener.
Okay.
His writing, those at the top. Of course, Truman Capote in Cold Blood for kind of a blend of a nonfiction book or a nonfiction book using fictional techniques.
Maybe you've already given me the answer to this question in your first answer, but what is one book that you could read over and over again, perhaps even recite?
Man, recite. I don't know that I would recite any, but no, I mean, I'm more reciting poetry, you know. Robert Frost and some of the poets that I love, but I don't know that I would recite. I really love the work of Faulkner, and
mm-hmm.
of course Shakespeare. Shakespeare, I go around. I think we all recite some of his lines each day without even realizing it.
That's true.
Yeah. Of course the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of the good old fashioned printed books, or have you evolved with technology, not unlike Unisys, and read on a device now?
I do read on the iPad, but I also read hardcover, so I'm definitely in a hybrid reader. Mm-hmm. I would call myself a hybrid reader. I love the printed books. I love the feel of them and the smell of them. I just always mm-hmm. have loved the smell of a printed book, especially one that's, you know, never, you know, freshly, you know, fresh off the bookstore shelves. But the convenience of electronics is very nice. You know, you can order one and have it within seconds without having to go to the bookstore. So that's nice too. It's just, I still prefer the printed book. It just feels more substantial.
There is something to how a book feels and smells. I agree with that. Even just the comparison between how a library smells and a bookstore smells. Interesting.
Yeah, you just don't get that smell with an iPad, do you? To smell that sniff an iPad, it just doesn't smell like anything particularly nice. So... Yeah, like
we have to get to Apple somehow and tell them to have some kind of like smell-o-vision to go with the book.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. A lot of the things that we kind of read for pleasure don't usually, like you were kind of mentioning, go around business per se when we think about nonfiction books even. But when you were young and you were reading, did you find business interesting?
No, not at all. I did everything I could to avoid it. Yeah, business, money, finance, economics. Yeah, I definitely avoided all that. I had no interest in it and was almost had a bias against it, because business meant sort of had that evil feel to me when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
So I avoided it. I wanted something more pure. You know, I considered writing more pure, and business was sort of a bit on the evil side. But I was very naive then. So.
What would you say to your, you know, say 17-year-old self if you know, your 17-year-old self confronted you about your career path?
I would say chill out. You know, it's just you need to chill out, and it's life's more complicated than you think it is. You'll see. You know, just be patient with yourself. Be patient with the world. People are doing their best and making a living. Business is really, really important to people's livelihoods, to the success of the world. Does wonderful things. So loosen your ideals and focus on what's real.
Good advice. Be interesting if we were able to confront our 17-year-old selves and give them a true glimpse of what adulthood is like, right?
Oh, yeah. I'd have a lot more fun, I think, when I was younger.
I had a funny thought in my head, because I know that as somebody who's the spokesperson and in charge of PR for a huge corporation, and you've had so many years of exercising such extreme caution with words, do you find yourself auto-correcting people in your head?
Oh, my gosh, yeah, because I'm trained as a writer and editor, years and years of training, and my college career was really excellent. I went to Temple for my undergraduate and then my graduate, and I had some very, very good professors who marked up my papers with lots of red lines and red lettering, and I really learned from them a great deal about sentence structure and agreement and verb and noun agreement and tenses and point of view, and it was great training for me. And to this day, yeah, I'm always editing. I'm editing in my head. I'm editing when I look at words on the screen, wherever I'm seeing them, I'm editing them. Yeah,
it's got to be so ingrained in you right now.
It is.
I know you recently served on a panel, and I know that you you know, you probably have a good idea of who the leaders are in corporate communications. Who is it that you admire in corporate communications, and why?
I don't really think of specific people. I think of companies, and I think of brands
okay.
that do a great job. You know, I just think of brands that, and part of that has to do with the communications people. It also has to do with the leaders of those organizations and with
okay.
how they've been able to articulate what makes their brands and their companies different. And GE's done such a wonderful job, I think, over the years. A great example of a company that's transformed its image and brand successfully. You know,
mm-hmm.
from a manufacturer 100 and some years ago to a company today that's known as much more than that and is deeply involved in the Internet of Things. And
mm-hmm.
very innovative. And it's a really good example of a company that's transformed its image over the years. So, you know, it's companies. And Apple obviously went from a company that was seen as an also-ran
mm-hmm.
20, 25 years ago, struggling financially. And what they've been able to do, and that has to do with the vision of the leaders, you know, Steve Jobs, but the people on the marketing side, who just some brilliant people. So,
Excellent.
Just amazing. Yeah.
The next question may relate, I'll let you kind of choose whether you're going to relate it more to the personal writing, the writing that you do outside of your professional career, professional corporate career, I should specify. And the writing that you do for your corporate career. But what impact do you hope your writing makes when you think about the fact that, you know, a lot of people's jobs may have an impact in the here and now, but when you create words and writing, it's left, right? It's a printed word. It continues after you're here. What do you hope people get from your writing?
Yeah, it's a different answer depending on whether we're talking about my personal writing, you know, my love of fiction and poetry and the work that I do there, the short stories, versus
mm-hmm.
the work professionally. Certainly, personally, I want to convey emotion. I want to convey beauty and the sense of a person's character and express the joy of just being alive and the pain of being alive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with personal writing, it's about being very, very clear. And what I find a lot in the corporate world is that people use words in a gobbledygook, jargon, whatever, but they describe things without really understanding what it is that they're saying. So they're using
mm-hmm.
words as a cover without really understanding what it is they're trying to say. So what you end up with is looking at something that doesn't really convey anything clearly. It doesn't even
mm-hmm.
have necessarily a clear objective? What's the objective of the communication? What's the
it's
objective
kind
of
of generic
everything?
And it doesn't resonate
It's,
on any kind of level.
yeah, it doesn't really
Mm-hmm.
do anything. Any communication is supposed to move something from one
That's why I
point
find
A to
most
point B.
resumes to be.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. Well, that's because I think fundamentally a lot of people just don't understand what writing, good writing and communication is about, which is trying to either influence or inform. You know, one of those, typically one of those two things, or to move, you know, but it's moving anything, something from point A to point B. So, anyway, that's what I like to think, you know, my writing does. It moves someone or something from point A to B, whether it's a perception, you know, your perception of a company or a brand, you're trying to move them from where they're at now to something different, or maybe it's to inform someone who doesn't know about a product or service, and then you're trying to move them to an informed position.
Definitely makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think it would be easy to find your samples of your corporate communications. Where would people go if they wanted to see your other writing?
They're not going to be able to find much because I haven't done it. I haven't published a lot, you know, maybe a handful of short stories, a handful of poems. So really not a lot. I've sent out a lot, especially when I was younger and got a lot of rejections. So I don't have any novels published. I don't really have a lot to show, but hopefully one day I will. Stay tuned.
Or we'll be waiting for it. Be looking for it.
Yeah.
I know you have a lot on your plate with your role right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a lot.
You're at the top of the communications chain, and I know that you've, in your position and throughout your tenure, you've ushered a lot of junior communications talent through to the senior rank. And I know that in your written answers, you were talking about the willingness to work hard and how that is, you know, key to success. What do you think that hard work looks like that gets you to the top when it comes to corporate communications or investor relations?
Well, you know, it's a lot of things. It's certainly the fundamentals of responsiveness in communications. I think in general, but in communications in particular, you have to really be extremely responsive. You have to be on top of things, and you have to get back to people very quickly. That's expected. So if you're not on top of it, then you won't be perceived as someone who's well on top of it. So you gotta be extremely responsive. You gotta also be, you know, a very good writer. That's sort of the basic, and you have to have knowledge. Subject matter knowledge, expertise, domain expertise. So you have to know your subject. And the last thing I stress this a lot with people I talk to, be willing to delve into the world of finances. I know it can be a somewhat scary area for people like liberal arts. That's my background, liberal arts. I didn't want to really, you know, get into finance or never really thought I'd be getting an MBA, but having it has made me much more valuable. So once you get the finance background, a little bit of finance background, you're able to speak the language of the executives, and that makes you so much more valuable. Without that, you're perceived as yet another communicator, and there's a lot of those. There's an awful lot of those. I think that's really important.
So I know you can always learn a domain, right? And if you have a fundamental talent, you can always learn to be a better writer. Do you think you can learn responsiveness?
You know, I think it's somewhat of a character trait. If you're not fundamentally a highly responsive, on top of things person, you may not be in the right field, you know, for marketing communications, just because it's expected. But I think it's true pretty much across the business world. You have to be very responsive. You can learn that. I think what you learn is you learn the day-to-day expectations of business and what's needed from a, you know, by an executive and the people in the organization to be successful.
Sure.
That's what you learn, and then you either like it or you don't. You know, either decide that's for me or you don't, and it's exciting. Yeah, I think you can learn it, but it definitely has to be something you want to be, you want to aspire to.
Yeah, it's got to be something that you're willing to to change your habits in order to be more of. Would you have considered your college self responsive?
Oh yeah, I was responsive, but I didn't know the world of business back then. So I was disciplined, very disciplined. Tend to be very disciplined. That's important too. the discipline.
Sure.
Time management is really critical because there's a lot of demands on you as a communications professional in this world, and there's even more so these days with all the communication channels that exist today that didn't exist 10, 15 years ago. There's a lot of different things to stay on top of. So you have to manage your time very, very carefully. It's one of your most important weapons is your time management skills and how you're managing the time during the course of the day.
Do you have any tricks for time management that you want to share with any of the aspiring communication people?
Well, one thing I've learned over the years, and that may not be welcome news to a lot of people, is to rise early. Get up early, rise early, get on top of the news before your bosses and the executives are, at least as early as they are. Because what will happen, if you're in a communications leadership role, most of the executives are early risers as well. So they get up early. It's found, there was a study I saw recently that showed that early risers tend to do better, or be more successful, financially successful in their careers and their life. And they tend to be most of the executives. So the executives get up early, and they have to get an early jump on the day. And they expect you, as their communications people, to be on top of the news. And if they're coming to you and saying, hey, did you hear about this, and you didn't hear about it, that's not going to create a good impression with them.
Certainly not. Yeah, that actually, early rising is a newer habit for me. I read a book called The Miracle Morning, and I've created a habit of getting up earlier, and I can already sense a difference in myself. For anybody out there who has complaints about that tip around, you know, I was definitely always a night owl. Having been an entertainer and been in a band, staying up late nights, it was kind of like something I just believed about myself, and I was able to change it. So, you know, it is just a habit that you can learn how to form.
But there's sacrifices to that. The sacrifices are that you go to bed earlier in the evening, you sacrifice some of the things that are happening in the evening. So everything has trade-off in this world, but I just find the early morning, you can make up for a lot of the evening stuff, but you can't make up for that early morning, I find. You can't make up for that early morning vacuum. If you're getting up late and you're not on top of the news at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, that gap of a half an hour could be the difference between success and failure.
That is great advice. That is great advice that I'm gonna leave our listeners with. Jim, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your story and experience with our listeners. I wish you all the best of success with Unisys. And anybody who's listening who's not already subscribed to our newsletter so that you can take advantage of reading the answers that he provided to about a dozen questions about his career path, go to epiccareering.com. Right at the bottom of the page and almost every page on our website, you can subscribe right to our newsletter. So thanks again, Jim, for being our guest on Epic Career Tales. And until next month.
Thanks, Karen.